Good morning, Metroplex. Ruben is in the mood already to party it up here in Oxnard, California. It is training camp show number two. All right, Ruben, that's enough. You're going to give me a stroke. Here on... Is that my computer? RJ?
No, that's me. That's RJ. That's not the computer. I didn't have my audio turned off yet.
Yeah, don't need those light switches. I don't want us waking up the raccoons around here and having them scatter.
Yeah, we got a left tackle scare and an animal scare to start off the Tolo Tuesday edition of Sean, RJ, and Bobby live from the tennis courts in Oxnard, California. And, of course, our coverage brought to you by on-time experts Rhino Shield and Yardbird Southern Table and Bar. I was walking up and I said, you know, what? Isn't there like always a skunk? One time a year. Isn't there always a stench or an animal running around? And we show up here to the broadcast tent, and Ruben has discovered an overturned bucket.
Oh, no.
With a bunch of food and scraps on the ground that the poor young man is cleaning up as we speak. And our animal detection went to work. We came up first with, I thought, the most plausible, obvious answer. I said, this must have been a raccoon.
Had to be a raccoon.
Must have been a raccoon. Well, as I'm walking up the steps to find something to drink here, I hear the other R word thrown out, rattlesnake.
Yeah, that was Choppy was like, oh, don't worry about raccoons, because I don't, raccoons are, they are like one of the top seeds for worst animals in existence. They are awful. They're mean. They are not one of these animals who are just as scared of you as you are of them. They want to fight. Like, no matter how small or whatever else, they're like, yeah, you may kill me, but I'll give you rabies, and I'm not worried about it. So I don't want to mess with those things. And then Choppy goes, you should be more scared about rattlesnakes. And I was like, okay.
Yeah, now the rattlesnake would have done that.
Okay, but I was like,
right,
okay.
They're not hunting for
then why scraps. Did you bring it up?
Oh, I was just thinking of animals that would be hiding underneath the...
It seemed like rattlesnake was being introduced as a candidate.
Yeah.
Oh,
like,
no.
This is something that... Well, and here's the problem.
Bobby's standing here outside the tent, and he goes, whoa, rattlesnake? Like, where did a rattlesnake come from?
Yeah.
And then Bobby's like, check underneath. And so everyone is standing outside the tent going, well, we should check underneath, as no one proceeds to go ahead and look underneath the table. And then finally, Ruben and RJ, they manned up.
That's what the problem is. If it was just RJ saying, I would have been like, this is just RJ saying rattlesnake, because he's just... But literally 2 seconds later, Ruben went, yeah. What do you mean, yeah? Hold on. No. What do you mean, yeah?
Yeah, I just did it to scare you.
Yeah, okay, that's what it was.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think that, you know, it's we have had snakes up here on the tennis courts.
I've never heard or remember one. Remember it.
So no,
I would go, I'm deathly afraid.
This is back went in, home. So.
This is back in the urban days. We had, there was a camera guy, because we, behind us, that used to be all open. And there was a camera guy. He had all of his camera equipment, and in there was a giant, had to be 7 foot, bull snake. Just this massive hissing.
Yeah.
Oh, huge.
Well, it wasn't when I was here.
No. It was that you were not here.
Yeah.
The snake would be underneath the table. Get some warmth in here in the tent.
You checked? You checked thoroughly?
We checked. And the moment we would have rustled around, it would have rattled.
Okay, I don't know how much I'm trusting all your animal knowledge, but I'm just going to sit here and do the show. But I guess more importantly now that we don't have, and I tweeted out so you guys can make fun of us, the overturned bucket and the food. You tell me if a snake could be capable of that?
No, absolutely not.
Turning the thing over, you know? Brian brought us, he could be the snake, because I'm not going to say the individual who suggested his name first, but Broadus and Dawson, everyone's staying back to record their extra 13 podcasts that they do on the daily. We're thinking Brian Broadus did not secure and close up the tent the way he should have, and because it wasn't closed and secure, animals were able to get in here, and now they know food's here. That's the big problem.
Yeah. Problem.
Now it's in the memory bank.
Yeah, when you feed a stray, they keep coming back.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, that's...
You'll know this when you get a house, Bobby. Like,
no, I know that's what you did with Reema. So, like, he keeps coming back every break.
Bobby got a fresh night of sleep, and he is ready to go today.
I'm just kidding, Reema. I know you're sitting in that studio just cackling your head off.
Yes. So now they know that the food is here, but I put it out on all the socials. Give me your investigative report. for it. Pepe, what do you think? Have you seen what I put out there? I tagged you in it.
Yeah, I saw it. I was like, okay, who's leaving that much garbage right there? I mean, do y'all not have someone that comes by and takes it out? Or is it the last person in there should take it out?
Ruben raised his hand. You know, that was my theory. I was like, what if it's just a bunch of, what if G-Bag is a bunch of slobs? Like, what if they just knocked it over or threw stuff on the ground and the guys quickly shut me down? They're like, no, something did that.
Well, they're sabotaging y'all because they're still upset about the Rowdy Tellez stuff.
Yeah.
Well, they're upset about more than that. They're just upset in general.
They are upset in general. We called a ceasefire, but RJ Choppy has retracted that. More on that later, on how the ceasefire quickly ended. It was as quick as, you know, Ukraine and Russia, you know?
Yeah.
What else did we have a ceasefire Trump got mad about? Was it Israel, I think?
Israel and Iran. Gaza,
yeah.
One of the is Gaza. That's not a country.
I have no opinion on ceasefires or international relations of any sort.
Yeah, you keep killing local media members. All right.
Have you heard the one about Mike Leslie?
We got the we got stuff on him too later, man.
I'm so happy you've come around.
I used to defend him all the time.
WFAA.
You know, he's just out here doing his thing. You know, he always I do like, you know, if I had the tuck in shirt body,
yeah,
I would tuck in.
Yeah,
I would tuck in. But what he did to us yesterday was one of the most grotesque human just niceties nice. That are lacking. And it's typical of somebody from Massachusetts.
Okay.
It's very typical.
All right, we'll get into it later on. Let's get into the humongous left tackle scare that happened out here on the practice fields.
Yeah, Tyler Guyton had left the practice field yesterday after getting rolled up on, and it was something. When you see him coming off, it's like, okay, he was down on the field for a little bit, and he's just kind of slowly walking off. But
yeah,
it didn't give off the feeling like
no. They
were looking at anything serious. And then an emotional roller coaster. We get the breaking news. I mean, literally, as soon as I hit send on my email, you hit send on the text that said Guyton in all caps. And I'm like, oh, gosh, what is this? And you open it up and you see he's feared to have torn his ACL. And at that point, you're just going, okay, this, because we said yesterday,
cursed.
The offensive line, if the offensive line is not, if it does not take a step up, if it's not what it's supposed to be, this team is screwed. That is what kind of everything centers around this year. And then we get the follow-up just a little bit later. They go, never mind. False alarm. So an MRI actually brought good news. I feel like you never hear he's feared to have torn an ACL, and then they're like, never mind. The MRI said he didn't. Like, usually they do those tests. They will literally grab your calf, and they'll, like,
pull
it forward, and if your knee cap basically just jots out, your ACL's gone. But
so
instead...
So they did?
They must have done one of those tests and saw some instability or something. But the MRI ends up showing that, no, that this actually is not a season-ending torn ACL. Instead, this is a bone fracture. It will not require surgery. 4 to 6 weeks is when he'll be out. What I had heard last night is that with that 4 to 6 week timeline, the thought is this could be just maybe a game or two, potentially. That is all that he ends up missing. So... Opening night Philadelphia probably is out of the question, I would guess. But outside of that, you might be getting him back.
So did Ian Rappaport butcher this story and then Todd Archer came in to save the day with the clarification?
No, they were worried it was an ACL. They were worried it was an ACL with their first... Because that's the thing. You do the initial tests
right. And
then go, all right, we need to get the imaging to confirm it. But the initial tests, they thought there was something about it that looked like it was instability or something that said it's an ACL tear. And then they ended up circling back around and saying, nope, MRI says that he's actually clean.
And that's the trials and tribulations of the reporting world, I bet. Because,
jeez,
you know, that's correct information at the time.
Yeah.
But no one remembers that. You know, they'll be like, oh, he ain't got it wrong.
Right.
You know, but did he, you know, from the information he got,
right,
it was probably accurate. And that was kind of the fear.
What a dodged bullet.
Oh, my gosh.
Holy hell.
I mean, now he's... Sidebar on this is that this guy's got probably the loosest kneecap ligament situation in the world. If they did the test on him, the stability test, and he failed it,
it may have been an issue, because, like I said, that's one of the tests they do. They have a few different tests they can do. Whatever would they check, they may have just said it looked like there was some sort of question about it. Is what their initial test showed. That's why they wanted to get the MRI. But yeah, typically they'll like. I mean, I know there was I had a friend who tore an ACL, and they basically, like,
well,
they not only did the plug, there's something else they did where it's like they literally, like, yeah, it's, you can generally see there's instability here and know what's up.
What would they have done, and what will they do here over these next 4 to 6 weeks, including maybe the opener? Who's going to get the left tackle reps?
So I would assume that the one who's getting left tackle is similar to like when Terrence Steele had gone out. They had the swing tackle going there, Hakeem Adeniji. So I would say that he's probably the leader in the clubhouse, but if they're specific to sides and they say, no, Adeniji's covering right tackle when Steele's out, and then Austin Richards does left tackle, those could be your options. I think we all kind of were impressed with Austin Richards during training camp and preseason last year, as I recall. That he stepped in and played well. I know Brian really likes him and thinks he can be good. Brian liked him really good, like well inside. And he was surprised that when he had like talked to some people with the team last year, he's like, man, he looks good inside. They're like, that's a tackle though. Nope, that's a tackle. And then they were pretty insistent on it. So I would say that Adeniji and Awesome Richards are the ones who are the options that you're stuck staring at.
I was getting Tyron Smith in my DMs. I think Broadus may have brought up Tyron Smith when we were sitting there pre-gaming before dinner. People were wondering, what about sliding up Tyler Smith?
So people have talked a lot in the last 2 days about Sadiq Charles. Jake Ferguson, who's coming up later, he brought him up yesterday. Randomly throws him out as just Sadiq's moving people.
Yeah.
Schottenheimer brought him up yesterday and just talking about what a people mover he is. And Sadiq Charles is a strong dude. When he was coming out, his initial like comparison that a lot of people had in terms of just physically, not as a player, he went in the fourth round, but physically a lot of people said that's Tyron. Like he is just a powerful, strong, lean 20-year-old dude when he was coming out. And he had retired from the Commanders or the Titans, Titans he was with. He had retired from the Titans and ended up coming out of retirement to join the Cowboys. And so he's been playing guard, and that's where he's got a lot of his power. He might, I don't know if they feel like he might be able to slide out and play some tackle, though, if they needed him to.
So Tyler Guyton, Nick Harris had been tweeting, having a great day so far. He limps off. That just looked like he was fine. It looked like he was totally fine just limping off under his own power. Brevin Spanford is likely out a couple of weeks with an ankle injury. Terrence Steele was back with the Cowboys in team drills. So that is your extensive injury report coming from the practice fields yesterday here from DFW Sports Station.
Feathers injury reports this early when they haven't even, I mean, they've barely done anything.
Yeah, I mean,
You
will see some stuff occasionally. Their injuries are way up right now from what they've been in years past. And I don't know. That becomes a question of, is this bad luck? Or is there just something about the intensity level of practice that they need to adjust? Do they need to, like, have they gone too far on the competitive side? It's at least a question, and it's something that I think, when you're talking about a first-time head coach,
yeah,
it may be he's going, okay, I need to ratchet some of this back. And then again, it may be, and I'm going to ask around to some people about it today, it may be a case of just, it's bad luck. Bad luck has hit them before where they just get a rash of injuries out here. But, I mean, they've had...
Well, it's also like, I was saying this yesterday, it's so ridiculous. I was like, not calling them out because it's the status of NFL camps. These guys are going to go from not hitting at all and tackling to... It's literally 0 to 120 miles an hour opening game. Well, who has the most contact out here by far? It's the guys up front.
Yeah.
Because the wide receivers aren't getting hit. The quarterbacks aren't getting hit. The running backs aren't getting hit. It's going to be the guys up front. Guyton, Spanford injury, Terrence Steele, guys up front. But if you come out here and watch practice, really my mind is boggled as to how they just go from this to smashing each other's faces in with live bullets.
Yeah, and I always wonder, like, how there aren't more fumbles week one. Maybe there are.
Yeah.
Maybe there are, but you would think that, like, that would be the one thing outside of the injuries that would just get, you know, a little bit, you would see more of that because you're not used to getting hit. They reach at the ball, but they don't really actually try to rip it out in practice. You know, receivers, you know, not getting those contested balls.
Yeah.
Because you still, even though... There's contact here. It's not like that.
Through the first six practices the last 3 years, they had a total of 9 injuries over the last 3 years. They've had 9 injuries the first 6 practices out here.
Maybe Mike's GPS thing knew what he was doing.
I mean, it's the one thing.
877-881-1053.
I didn't win a Super Bowl, though, so I don't know.
877-881-1053 in order to hit us up on the Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorney text line. I'm going to guilt the hell out of Brian Broadus because Ruben has been down here for 15 minutes scrubbing this floor. Now, if he secured it like normal, Ruben, Is there any way an animal could have gotten in? No. It would not have happened. So we got to guilt the hell out of Broadus to pay like for all of Ruben's drinks and food the rest of the week, and he will. Yeah. It can be easily done.
He's down there with the soft soap.
All about the tuna.
Yeah, he's got he's got soap down. Now, how do we know Dawson did not broadcast in this tent? Oh, he went upstairs. He got high. He went to the top.
See,
deck.
That's smart. He wanted the backdrop of the fields.
It was smart.
Yep.
All right. So we got Brian Broadus on deck. The ceasefire is off. Live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. Sean, RJ, and Roberto, and the Rangers' winning streak is off as well. We have some big time trade names injured and in trouble for alleged gambling. Everything you need to know on the home of the Rangers with Sean and RJ next.
3-1. Ward hits one high in the air to left center field. Langford back. He's on the track. He's at the wall. He leaps up, and that's gone. Taylor Ward with a home run. 25th of the season for Ward. Angels back on top 4-3.
Jared Sandler with the call, and the winning streak is over. They lose to the Angels here in California, 6-4 on DFW Sports Station. It's Sean, RJ, and Bobby live from Oxnard, California, 105.3 The Fan. Jacob DeGrom, he gets roughed up in this one. 5 1/3, 7 hits, 5 earned, did have 8 strikeouts, and he has now given up a home run. I believe this is a career high, 5 straight outings for DeGrom.
Scooble has not done that.
Neither did 8 years ago DeGrom, Bobby.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Smoltz used to say, still says,
Rangers suck.
No. Well, yes, but no. That as a starter, throughout the course of the year, you'll have like 5 starts where you're just unhittable, and then 5 where you have nothing, and then the rest of those starts make up your season. And this was clearly one of those where Jake had nothing. We saw it early on in the year against Tampa. He allowed 4 in a 5-inning stretch. We saw the next start. He allowed 3 and 4 innings. There was a Toronto game where he didn't strike a single guy out. He only allowed 2 runs in 6 innings that game, but when Jake DeGrom doesn't strike you out, anybody, that tells me he didn't have his best stuff. He clearly didn't have his best stuff yesterday. And the Angels kind of...
What did you say about the strikeout that it tells you? When
Jake DeGrom has 0 strikeouts in the game, it tells me he doesn't have his best stuff.
But he had 8.
Swings and misses yesterday.
He had 8 strikeouts.
I was going back through the games where he struggled.
Okay.
Right. So yesterday... the Angels just have gotten to him this year. He's allowed 8 runs and 2 starts to them this year. They've just kind of figured him. I don't want to say figured him out, but they've done a good job of getting to him. You expect to win the game when Jake DeGrom starts, and when you're in a playoff chase, and you have teams in front of you that you know in the wild card that lose that day, you've got to be able to take advantage of it. They weren't able to do that. The offense didn't step up. The 4 runs a little misleading because there was a fly ball with 2 outs that was dropped that allowed the 2 runs to score. So it's, I mean, you don't really even count those. So it was a very uninspiring day.
Yeah, I mean, other than just you get the Josh Young home run, which is nice to see because he's come back up and he's seen the ball a whole hell of a lot better than he was earlier in the year. I mean, you got... Since he came back up, this is since he returned from the minors. First off, he has a hit in every game, so he's got a hitting streak since he returned. But he's 9-for-22, 2 home runs, 5 RBIs. He's walked 3 times to 6 strikeouts, which is a much better rate than he was doing previously. And so he's hitting .409, .480 on base percentage. His OPS is .1162 since he got back from the minors. If you're getting, obviously, that's not going to be Josh Young for the whole year. But this so far looks like that's a guy who went down there, started seeing the ball better, and has tweaked some things. Which was honestly just the biggest thing you needed from him, was just seeing the ball better.
You're 4 games back in the West. The Astros have lost 5 straight. They are bleeding. And you're a half game back now in the wild card. But you're right there in the thick of it.
Yep.
I mean, you are right there. They lose the opener to the Angels on DFW Sports Station. We will have Game 2 today right here on The Fan with our coverage out here in Los Angeles of Anaheim or whatever the heck they call it. Now let's get to trade targets. You got a closer and you got a hitter. And yesterday the hitter got drilled, Suarez off the Diamondbacks. The guy is just locked in. Yes, he's mid-30s. Well, so are his home runs. Like, he's locked in to a 30-home-run season. He gets drilled with 95. They're hoping that's not anything major. And then we get a closer busted.
Emmanuel Classe, former Ranger. Well, I don't know when people are going to learn, but he is the latest to be put on paid leave for suspected gambling on these first pitch gambling prop bets.
Yeah.
All right. So first pitch of the inning, there were like 22 of them that were balls, and 11 were completely non-competitive. 19 of them were really out of the zone. Non-competitive means like there's not even a chance that you could get a swing. These are the 40 footers in the dirt.
Wow.
Right. These are the ones that are just, he's throwing a bounce pass.
Yeah.
Like they're in the NBA skills challenge. You know, like some of those, like they labeled as non-competitive. Like, all right, you know, I could see them swinging at this.
And this is the best closer in the game.
Yes. For the last about 2.5-3 years, this has been the guy. You can't beat the science, guys. Like, it's pretty obvious.
I thought we did a great job
of
breaking this down on the way to go in and getting the pregame dinner drinks in the car. So we can really speak to this a lot more. I mean, you're Mr. Gambler guy, but over the past year, I've been playing with Underdog.
Mm-hmm.
And you go on there and you can bet on these things, right? How many batters in the first inning? Which pitcher gives up first run allowed? And we were just talking about how this gets flagged.
Yeah, so
and the other follow up is it getting flagged, and what amount of money does Classe have to be getting and splitting, unless he has a relative or he's just doing it off a different account? What return is he getting to justify taking this risk?
Right.
If I go and make like a first inning prop bet off a pitcher, I just chose a random pitcher last night, the max it allowed me to do was $3,000. Okay. So, like, let's just take three times. How many times did you say you got 22?
22 first pitch balls. But, I mean, like, he's not, you know, that's just, he's probably not betting on every game.
Right.
Right.
But they got flagged somehow. If there are, did it say how many times he got busted for or no?
They haven't done that yet.
But a $3,000 return, like, how many times do I have to win that over to justify as a major league closer who has this status and contract to make it worth my while?
I mean, okay, so this year he's making $4.9 million. Next year he makes $6.4 million. The following year he makes $10 million. And then the year after that he makes $10 million. And then he's a free agent. And guess what? When he's a free agent, he's going to get a contract for $15 to $20 million per year.
Yeah. I'd be interested to see.
And if I bet $3,000, let's just say $3,000 was the max. If I bet $3,000 20 times.
Yeah.
Like, on the best closer, is that not look suspicious? Like, when does it get flagged? I'd like to ask someone in Vegas that.
I would assume it's
how many times and what money amount?
Yeah, I would assume that it's a dollar amount on a very specific prop bet where you go kind of close to the max, and then it's constantly hitting. And now, from what they heard, that these were the casinos in Ohio and New York and New Jersey. Obviously, the Ohio one raises a flag. I think it would also raise a flag is if it's the same casinos as the Luis Ortiz, which is his teammate. Right? When your teammate gets flagged, don't you think you just stop? Wouldn't you just stop what you're doing, like, immediately? But, you know, you have to do this to make it worth your while, and I don't know that it ever is. Even if they're giving you 3-to-1 odds, right, because there's
yeah.
Generally you'll throw 65 to 70% strikes.
Right.
Even if they're giving you 3-to-1 odds
yep.
at $3,000.
$9,000.
When you're making $5 million a year, you're going to do this over. And if you do this 20 times, you can do this over $180,000.
You have to be in debt, like it seemed like that Pistons guy was.
Yeah.
To where he's owing his barber and dentist. who was the Piston? Reet was screaming in the next room. Oh, gosh.
Malik Beasley. Right? Malik Beasley.
Yeah. I mean, veneers are expensive. But
if you're the dentist, wouldn't you just wait till my next year's contract when it goes up to $6 million?
Like, here's the thing. I don't know his situation. I mean, this may not be applicable to him at all. I'd be interested to look at how many of these situations we're looking at with MLB players that are betting on this are players who were international free agents who are still in arbitration years. And maybe they feel like they've got a lot of expenses. They're not making a lot of money yet. They feel like they're locked in and cannot get to their contract until year seven, which is still the MLB situation. They're lucky they don't have the cap until Manfred tries to get it in, I guess. But they're lucky they don't have the cap right now. But the whole fact that you could spend 4 years in the minors playing baseball, 4 or 5 years, and then you get up to the majors and you got to spend 6 years before you get up to making your value. I don't know what his situation is. I'm just saying that's
right.
Interesting. Now, they looked this up. His StatCast waste percentage, Emmanuel Class A, which is just pitches that are not even close to the zone. On the first pitch of the ninth inning, it's 17.5%. And every other pitch in the ninth inning, it's 5%. So he's coming in there, and it's the very first pitch. And there's a video on here. He's skipping him eight feet short.
By the way, do I have to kick him out of the sport?
Yeah.
Do I have to kick him off my team? You are intentionally getting us you're intentionally starting off in a 1-0 count.
Oh, yeah.
Pete Rose, right? At least if it was him throwing a strike, you can say you're not hurting us. You are going
grooving it.
What's that?
Unless
you're grooving it. But you're intentionally putting us down in a 1-0 count. Like, you're betting against us. You're betting against your team. I don't care if it's 10 strikes, 10 balls, whatever it is. Right. You're manipulating.
Yeah, he's wrong. Like, and it's bad. He probably will get banned if they can prove this, and he probably should.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I wonder if the environment of all the arbitration stuff and international free agents is creating a climate where those guys feel like that. Because the other one, I think if we looked back and did this, I think some of these instances have happened with international players in arbitration years.
Yeah, I also think in this situation and in a lot of the baseball ones, it could be also a way for him doing my buddy's like, hey, I got this bet. Can you throw a ball the first pitch? And he'll be like, yeah, I'll help you out. This way I don't have to help you out with my money. I'll help you out with the casino's money. This is in my control. I'm not doing anything wrong. I'm not betting on the game. I'm not taking any of the money. You're just manipulating the outcome yourself or your friend.
Do we think Luis Ortiz rolled on his teammate? Look, I'll give you Class A. You cut me some slack, right, man. Just let me walk.
Sure.
Literally. It's Sean, RJ, and Bobby live from Oxnard, California. There's your recap. Isn't it nice to be talking some in-depth baseball on July 29th? Yes. You have it because your team is back in it. And our training camp coverage is brought to you by Best Buy Windows and Siding, Greystone Roofing. They've got you covered when the hits keep coming. And Reliant AC. We'll have Diamond Cavs later on in the show, but Dak and Pickens finally connected on the deep ball. The Cowboys dodge a humongous scare at left tackle, and we're about to get someone paid out here, and it's not Micah Parsons. The next Cowboys contract to get done inside the star on the Home of America's team next. You are not going to want to miss the sit-down with Jake Ferguson, 720 Expressway, right here from Oxnard, California. It is training camp show number 2 with Sean, RJ, and Bobby, brought to you by Wild Fork Foods, the place you need to go for all your game day grilling. So Jake Ferguson will sit down 720 on DFW Sports Station, and we are set up here on the tennis courts. And we had a humongous scare yesterday. It is not a torn ACL for Tyler Guyton. It is intact, according to Todd Archer, and he will be out 4 to 6 weeks.
Yep, it is a bone fracture in his knee instead that they're dealing with right now. Or I guess, I don't know specifically if it's in the knee, but it's a bone fracture in that area that he's dealing with right now. And they're dodging a bullet here because it's not something that'll require surgery. It's not the ACL, like you said. And this is a timeline here where you're looking at probably at most, if he doesn't have any setbacks or anything else, at most 2 games. But it may be as few as one, or who knows, he could be just ready to go. But it does not sound like this will be an IR situation at all.
Well, I guess Stephen Jones is fine talking to some agents, because there was one here yesterday that had you and all the media insiders buzzing.
Joe Panos was out here, and Joe Panos is the former agent for Tyron Smith. He's repped a couple other guys in the past. I got to pull up a list and see who else the other one he got deals done with, because I flippantly said Lyle Collins yesterday because I could have sworn based off my memory Lyle Collins was one of them. And then somebody told me they were like, Lyle was not one of them. And I was like, oh, crap, I forgot about that. So that was my bad. But Joe Panos is a guy who's worked with the Cowboys on several contracts and a guy that they are very familiar with. And he was out here at practice yesterday, and he is the representative not only for Tyler Guyton, which he was out here for that, but he is also the rep for one Tyler Smith. And Joe was out here yesterday, and he was standing right out there with Adam Pacifica, the cap guy, and was chumming it up. And, you know, Steven came over, talked to him for a little bit. And so it was worth noting. It always piques my interest whenever I see there's an agent out here and they're on the inside of the fence. If you are inside and you're in the football area, that usually feels more like business, whereas on the VIP area, that's your visitor. You're hanging out.
Why is he talking to Tyler's agent, but they don't communicate with Micah's agent?
Man, money's gonna dry up, man.
I think they're Joe Panos generally will visit his guys. Like a lot of agents, this is the time of year they travel around, go visit their players and stuff like that. So they are familiar with him. I would guess even if he wasn't here, they would be interacting with him right now over the phone and different things like that. On a deal, because it got asked. Steven got asked about it during the press conference. I said, you know, Tyler Smith, when are you going to get a deal done with him, or when are you going to start negotiating with him? And Steven paused for a second. He goes, what makes you think we haven't started negotiating with him?
Right.
He's like, we don't talk about all our business. And so Tyler Smith.
We feel secure enough about Tyler Smith that we find paying him right now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That to me is one of their strongest home run evaluations. In terms of not only the skill set, but in terms of what the work ethic was going to be and what he could turn into. They hit that one really well. That was Klein Kubiak was the area scout for that, who's now their national scout. He had come on DallasCowboys.com with us afterwards and talked about it, and that was a big part of the projection. But, yeah, I think this is – I think they are trying to see if there's a pathway to get something done here. With Tyler Smith while they're out here. I would not be surprised if Tyler Smith gets a deal done before Micah.
Okay, which, whatever, fine.
And Deron Bland yesterday was like, yeah, I'd like to get paid as well. Tyler Smith, by the way, coming in case you forgot, number two on the NFL executive list at guard.
Guard! Does this not go counter to their philosophy of why would I pay early? Because I'm just...
If you give me a deal. Tyron Smith gave them a deal. Travis Frederick was the other one that Joe Panos had done. Travis Frederick gave them a deal. And both of those got done around the same time out here in California.
So they're like, we'll get rid of the cheap deal early if they're going to give me a deal?
Yeah, if you're going to give me the Tyron Smith deal. Tyron Smith locked in at under $10 million a year for basically a decade. And they're like, well, sure, we'll pay that now. We'll go ahead and do that now instead of letting anything change.
But what should Tyler's number be set at now after what happened with
25?
If I'm trying to get him paid and I'm arguing for him, I'm arguing he needs to be the top guard in the NFL.
Right.
And that should be $25 million or something like that.
And that's not going to be a deal.
No, that's not a deal.
I don't know that he's getting $25 million, though, is what I'm saying. I'm saying if they're the fact that they're trying to
tells you that it's under.
It either means it's under or that number isn't necessarily going to represent to the Cowboys what it looks like. It's going to look more like something else on their books than $25 million flat a year.
Inside the Star on your home of America's team, the way to hit us up with any of your Cowboy questions or takes, 877-881-1053, 877-881-1053, Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line, and Dak and Pickens finally connected on the deep ball. Went back and watched it over and over. Chiafalo got a nice video from the sidelines. Pickens beat Israel Mukwamu, and it looked like it was Malik Hooker also trying to help at safety. And Nick Harris said that Malik was having a really, really good day. But George Pickens finally gets the connection with Dak.
Yeah, and that was that was starting to become kind of the topic that was getting buzzed about a little bit out here at camp. Just like, okay, why haven't we seen this click yet? Why hasn't this occurred? And I mean, when they hit this pass yesterday, which anytime they hit a deep ball, you get the crowd clapping out here. But that felt yesterday, I was like, the crowd was aware they hadn't hit one exhaling during camp. And yeah, it was just kind of like oh, thank God they got it. And George Pickens is somebody who he and Dak had a little bit of trouble connecting during OTAs and minicamp, which is to be expected. The deep ball is the a lot of times it can be the most difficult thing to connect on with a new receiver because you're not sure about their catch-up speed, what they're able to get to, everything else. But he was good yesterday, and George Pickens has been good. He was good out here yesterday, and he's been getting rave reviews while he's been there. But clicking that into place, I think, was big for them.
What do we think of the shoes? Red shoes.
I didn't see them.
Oh, they're red shoes on George Pickens. They don't match. It's not a match shoe. But look at that. Look at those baddies.
I think he's red, white, and blue.
What I was paying attention to was his sit-down with the G-Bag Nation, because we were all kind of like, we want Pickens, but judging by his off-season interviews, he may not give much at all. Well, he did yesterday.
Much better yesterday. And, I mean, not that he was bad before, quote-unquote. He felt like he was closed off a little bit. He needed some time to warm up. Yeah. And yesterday he did warm up with the G-Bag Nation. I don't know if it's just because they connected with him because he's so fit and in shape, if that's the thing that they like about him. But George Pickens yesterday really got into some of the like detail about how he plays the game of football, and it was really interesting. This is cut four, Peyton. George Pickens on why he's able to make so many sensational acrobatic catches.
My whole life, I've been always kind of gifted, thanks to God. But, like, I kind of do work on it, too, just the minutia of receiver. And then I kind of, in the offseason, I work on little man's game. So stuff that Turk probably be able to do, that's what I'm – because I'm so big.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when I get out here, I'm moving way more fluent. But definitely with the catching, yeah, I kind of been like that.
Nice descriptive answer, by the way. Turpin got how many touches out here? Holy mackerel.
As many as they said Tavon Austin was going to get a couple years ago. Like, I mean, it was half the workload. But, no, that's good stuff. And Brian started going like, yeah, but the way you track the ball, man, the way you track it, it's just beautiful. Told him it's the best I've ever seen, and I've watched all the greats, is what he told Pickens.
Better than Don Hudson?
That's what he said.
Wow.
Now, George Pickens, how is it that you're able to track the deep ball so well?
The key to it is looking up.
Up.
A lot of people go here, look back,
and
try to see where the cue is.
Yeah.
The best thing is to look up. And then based off the trajectory, I play punt return, so if the ball is turning over like this,
it's
going to go farther. And then if it's a cue gets hit and it's wobbly, it's going to die out. You see what I mean?
So
you can really make – that's really why I make a lot of catches, because you can really make every catch if you know the ball trajectory.
Wow, this is good.
Yeah, it's good. And he talked about like the fact that he that reference there, just the idea of being a punt returner and seeing the way the ball is moving and having to track those, he gets an idea of what might sail, what he needs to like kick into extra gear for. Well, the other thing that he does, he's the contested catch master. They talk about, man, it's not a 50-50 ball. It's like 70-30 when he's one-on-one.
Mm.
So George Pickens on catching balls in traffic.
Yeah, while the DB is on, you kind of want to have your body as – I say dead as possible. Like you see what I mean? So he never knows what you can actually stop. You can run a stop route. He'll never know what route's coming. But as far as the ball trajectory, he also won't know when you're catching it. Because he's like, are you see what I mean? And with me knowing the trajectory, I know where it's going to be at all the time.
So he's talking about essentially there, and he was describing it, basically, you remember Ichiro years ago, faking like the, up, here I come, and then he was letting it drop in front of it. Like, kind of almost doing that. Like, just like, don't even let them know the ball's there.
Right.
Just kind of be very relaxed and then attack the football.
I love all those games that outfielders play.
Oh,
no. To trick you.
They do anything. You'll be running in on a bloop, and they just put their glove up as they're running full speed, trying to deceive in any way because of the depth perception.
George Pickens, when you survey the defense, take a look at the field and watch the DBs. What do you see pre-snap?
Especially pre-snap, they do a lot of, you know, defense like to play two, then switch to three, three, then switch to two. So after you diagnose that and they throw you the ball, then, I'm feeling him and see, and I look at him to see if he's got his eyes up. A lot of good DBs have their eyes up. So, but most DBs, even some of the great ones, just don't. They like to play with the receiver the whole time try to get a PBU when the whole time I'm just watching the ball.
And finally here, George Pickens. On running routes that Dak Prescott likes.
Me too. A lot of more digs.
There you go.
That's what I feel like. And not just here. A lot of other teams, they don't, you know what I mean? They don't want to implement it because you got a running back. You got this. But the Cowboys run a lot of digs. They run a lot of, and it's all off Dak. It's what he likes.
Sure.
So definitely on the move, let alone the deep ball.
What's a dig?
a dig is that's the like 15 up and then cut in. So you're running, and they do love those. They love the dig routes, and they love, in the past they've loved, and one of the things I hope they bring back, they killed with McCarthy last year, they didn't have it here, was the crossing routes. The deep crossers were stuff that Kellen used to love to run, and that's what Dak used to love to lean into.
Wasn't that what those double picks in Green Bay that 1 year was in the same?
Nope, those were option routes. The deep crossers are just deep. You're trying cut and spread everything.
You sure you don't want to ask Kurt Warner instead of Bobby what routes are and how to explain them?
That's right.
877-881-1053. Still one of the great all-time bits that was pulled off here by Jane Slater that we don't play often enough.
I think we played it enough.
Live on the Fan Cam, Twitch, and YouTube. It's going to be a loaded expressway. When we go commercial free at 720, Jake Ferguson, the new $50 million man, will sit down with us, followed by Ask Reddit. But man, Luka Doncic is just pouring more salt into the wound. And the kiss that has rocked the National Football League. We'll talk about it all after this.